Welcome to episode 276 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, frustrated, man. Tough day in football.
A tough day overall, a frustrating day, and that's why I felt like it was important for you and I to get together and just you know, knock something out, just because I know that there's other people out there that are just as frustrated as we are about the day. And I think this has a lot to do, I'm just going to go out there and say it right now, for everyone, we deserve this for trying to dictate the outcome of the 49ers-Saints game. Because this is the worst possible outcome.
Oh, so you think by people rooting one way or the other for Saints Niners, somehow that affected this game?
See, the outcome of that game now, it didn't matter because we lost.
Well, I guess I understand how you see it that way, because I think the Seahawks kind of saw it the same way, too. Like, they were watching Niners Saints and were rooting for a specific outcome one way or the other, right? And they didn't seem locked in tonight. Like, that team didn't seem to be in L.A. tonight.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't show up. There was no energy. That's one of the flattest performances I've seen from a Pete Carroll team since he came to Seattle. And it's difficult to watch. And I think we all feel like crap, especially with the way the Niners won and, you know, we lose to the Rams and all that. But I think we need to keep it in perspective. And I think this is what's important. Number one, we're 10-3. That was our third loss on the year. If I'd have told you at this point in the season, we were 10-3. You would be psyched about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And we still have the opportunity to keep destiny in our control and go out and win our next three games and be a bye, if not the one seed.
Right.
It's all right there still. And I think what's important is that one of these games happens to you at this point in the season when a team is feeling its oats. I mean, this Seahawks team winning five straight coming in here, over some heavyweights, some underdogs too, and really feeling like they could roll their helmet out there and just win. And you need that slap to the face. And this was an absolute slap to the face, because there's no way you should have been dominated in the trenches, and yet you were. That's a thing that is hard to swallow, but I think in the long term, going forward, this is going to be something that is good for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and you said it. This team was absolutely dominated in the trenches on both sides of the ball for a team that was so physical since week 10. That's what this huge letdown for me was all about. We had seen this team be physical the last few weeks, on the defensive side especially, and it wasn't there. It wasn't there on either side of the ball.
Well, it's easy to look at this game, and because of the way that it started, pin this on the defense. But in a lot of ways, I feel like this is a failure on the offense as a whole. I mean, you look at that first half, and there were opportunities to extend drives, whether that was a fourth down catch or a third down catch, and receivers flat out just dropped the ball, whether it's a touchdown in the end zone in the second half.
Yeah.
And you don't extend drives, and then it puts your defense right back out on the field, and you don't get points, and you don't keep it close. Then all of a sudden, it turns into this type of game. And it really was the inability of the offense to get going. And I pin it mostly on the wide receiving core. Like, the drops were terrible. The untimely penalties for, like, no reason. DK Metcalf getting into it with Jalen Ramsey. Like,
yeah, for no reason.
Ramsey is a king trash talker. Why are you letting him get in your dome?
Yeah.
Why? Don't do that. Receiving core is a real bummer in this game. And I'll even point to Tyler Lockett a little bit. Like, since the leg injury, he's two steps behind, and he's not getting any separation, and that's our number one deep threat. And now teams are being able to load up underneath, and it's been a real problem.
Well, and I think you can go back again to the 49ers game in week 10, and you can say Wilson hasn't looked the same since Lockett went down. And yeah, he's absolutely the guy. And yeah, DK Metcalf, he's doing a great job for a rookie receiver. He was just 6 yards short of passing Doug Baldwin in this game for the all-time rookie receiving record. So with three games left, Metcalf's going to have that number two spot locked up. He may be able to run down Joey Galloway. We'll see. You said you were going to put this on the defense, but I will put a little bit of this on the defense, because there were no red zone stops. Every single one of the Rams' visits inside the red zone resulted in a touchdown. And that's normally where the defense for the Seahawks, it allows the offense to stay in the game when they get some of these slow starts. And the Rams were up 21-3 at the end of the second quarter. And it looks a whole lot different if the Rams are, you know, held to a field goal on any one of those drives.
It'd make a huge difference. And I think you can point to a little bit, again, just on the defense's inability to make an adjustment and like really do something different because they're getting housed the way that they're playing. And nope, this is the way we play and we're going to keep doing it and beat us if you're better. Well, they're better in three wide than we are with three linebackers on the field, especially if that third linebacker is Cody Barton, a rookie.
Yeah.
And there was a couple points out there where it was Wagner and Burkervin and Barton, two rookie linebackers. And we're asking them to hold up against three receivers and a talented tight end in Higbee. I don't understand that for the life of me. I mean, we needed to go a lot more nickel there because Cody Barton struggled to contain the edge all night. And the Rams stretched us out. It was all very horizontal. And that's what got us way off base. They got us stretched out horizontally, and then they could hit all those middle shots with all the crossing routes that they run. And we tried going man early, and you just get jumbled up and picked off as a defender through the crossing routes. And then we tried going zone, and everybody was super slow to react.
Yeah.
And it just neither way worked. The real frustration is that we saw the defense turn a bit of a corner in the third quarter when they started heating Jared Goff up, and they started bringing some stunts and some A-gap blitzes, things like that. Diggs gets his interceptions. And we didn't continue with it.
Yeah, that's what led to the only touchdown of the game was that interception by Diggs that he's able to take for a house call. And it's crazy to think that just in the last 2 years, this is the first time that with Brian Schottenheimer as offensive coordinator, that the Seahawks haven't been able to score a touchdown on offense.
Yeah, I guess that is surprising. I mean, what's more surprising is to get beat in this manner. The thing is that, sure, the defense struggled early, but they did in the third quarter bow up and give the team an opportunity.
Right.
Special teams as well. Blocked field goal. Good punt by Dixon to change field position when we got stopped down low. But the offense just did not come to play in the second half, and that was the biggest problem.
Yeah, interception for a touchdown on the Rams' first drive coming out of halftime. So it feels like, okay, now if the offense can get going, great. And the Rams get the ball back. They give it back to Seattle. Diggs gets another interception. They start on the 3-yard line, and the offense moves 4 yards. And you kind of feel like, okay, well, that's kind of a win because maybe they score, and now you're gaining some field position, whatever. But then they get the ball back after the missed field goal, go 6 plays, 21 yards. Then the Rams, they go 3 and out, and then 3 and out again to end the third quarter.
Look, there were some key penalties in there, too, that were super frustrating. I mean, towards the end of the game, Ifedi has a false start for, like, no reason. The football was disjointed this entire game. And that was the hardest thing to watch. I mean, because each unit, except for the offense, came up big at some point in the game. And the offense hasn't come up big in the last couple games. And it does feel like it links up with Tyler Lockett's injury, but that shouldn't be an excuse.
Well, it could be the excuse or it could be the reason. I mean, having your number one receiver out there, it doesn't seem to impact the really good teams, right?
No.
But this is a team that we're maybe getting toward the margins, or maybe this was just another really bad showing and this is a team that can bounce back. I don't want to be doom and gloom about this being, oh, the Seahawks are done after this. There's no way they're still going to make the playoffs because who else is going to make the playoffs? They only need to win one game, and I think the Rams lose one game. So, we might be counting on the 49ers to help make that happen for us, but the Seahawks just need to take care of their own business.
Well, yeah, it's all before them. And I think what you just said actually points very much to the problem tonight. This was a game where, oh, you lose it. You're not out of the playoffs. There's no real pressure. And so all you really have to do is come back and win your next three games. To be a high seed, you could probably go 2-1 going down the stretch with very winnable games and still make the playoffs. So it's the fact that their backs were not up against the wall, I think, is what makes a big difference here. And you've seen this team do this over the years. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is. It's unbelievably frustrating. but there wasn't a huge onus on this game. We've seen the Seahawks get up for big games. This felt like a big game for the Rams.
Yeah.
Because if they lose, they're out of the playoff picture. And you saw them play like it mattered. And this team certainly did not come out and play like it mattered.
Well, and like you're saying, it doesn't really matter in the sense that now the Seahawks, they still have the ability to win their next three games of the season. And you get that Week 17 win over the 49ers and you still win the division.
Right. It's right there. But you got to beat a couple lesser teams in front of you. And those are kind of get right games. And if you can do that and the offense comes about, then you're going to be okay going into that week 17 matchup against the 49ers, especially when you look at the Niners tonight and, you know, the Saints somehow score 40 plus points and lose.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, 46 the Niners
points, the Saints scored 46 points and they missed a couple extra points, or at least one extra point that I saw.
Right. So the Niners aren't world beaters either. And I know it looks better like losing narrowly to Baltimore and then coming out with a, you know, relatively lucky win in New Orleans, but it's still wide open. And I'm not ready to get down about this yet. And I still feel very good about this team. And it's a team that can go out and beat any other team in this league on any given Sunday. But they have to be up for it. And they just weren't.
The Seahawks take the loss. It's the final score, 28-12 for Seattle. Just a couple field goals sprinkled in with that Diggs touchdown. First Pete Carroll primetime loss in December. Kind of felt like they were maybe due for a road loss after going 6-0. And gosh, if they can't beat Carolina on the road coming up, a team that just lost 40-20 to the Atlanta Falcons,
right.
then we're talking about being in a little bit of trouble here.
Well, it at least makes you worry. I mean, you're still in good position for the wild card, even if you do choke up a game to either the Panthers or the Cardinals going down the road here. But they're entirely winnable games. This is a better team than both of those teams. And then you throw your hat in the ring with the 49ers. So I'm not going to sit here and wring my hands and be like, all is lost. Again, 10-3 at this point in the season. I think any of us would have taken that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think all the goals for the Seahawks are still within reach. It's just there were so many frustrating moments in this, and the energy was probably the biggest frustration. But even at the end of the first half, they have the ball back with about a minute left, and you know, they dink their way down the field to about midfield. There's still 15, 20 seconds left on the clock. Russell Wilson gets sacked on second down.
Yeah.
And there's still 10, 15 seconds. They have time to line up. They could spike the football. They could go for a Hail Mary at the end the end of the first half. And there seemed to be no hesitation that they were just going to allow the clock to run out.
Yeah, that was absolutely maddening. And I think that's a great point to make. I think that also points to the end of the third quarter going into the fourth quarter. I mean, Seahawks have a third down and something. Last play of the third quarter, it would have been.
Right.
And there was like, you know, 10 seconds left or something like that. They could have lined up, got a playoff. While you need to maximize your possessions and maximize the time, and the fourth quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, would have been a de facto timeout. Like, basically just go out there and run another play, but yet you seem content down a bunch of points at that point in time.
Yeah.
To just, you know, be lackadaisical about it. And that's how it felt all day long.
Well, and even going into the fourth quarter, you know, Russell Wilson, for whatever reason, Malik Turner doesn't get his head turned around looking for the football in time. Third and 15, it would have been a touchdown. And they go to fourth and 15. There's about, what, like 7 minutes left in the game, down 28-9.
Yeah.
And you're kicking a field goal.
Sure.
Down 28. I mean, it kind of felt like the game was in the bag at that point for the Rams anyway. Why settle for a field goal? You're forcing yourself to score touchdowns twice and get two extra points at that point. It seems more likely that you could convert on a touchdown pass to the end zone.
On fourth and a million?
Fourth and 15.
Yeah, exactly. Fourth and a million. Like, no, I think that was the exact right call there. It puts it within two scores. I actually was very frustrated with them going for it on fourth down in the first half when you were down, what was it at that point? I think it was
14-3.
14-3.
Yeah, get six, and you're within one score and a two-point conversion.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand the panic there. I know the defense hasn't stopped anybody at that point, but really, you got to believe in them at some point. And it was just, that was super frustrating as well. And I said it before the play.
Okay.
Before they went for it on fourth down, I was like, I'd kick here.
Well, it was only 1 yard.
I get it.
Yeah.
It's not about the yardage. It's about game management.
And, you know, Hollister dropped that ball. It was right to him.
Another drop by, you know, the receiving core as a whole.
Yeah.
It was really a poor performance.
I mean, I think they had the play to get it. It was just
cool. yeah, you have the play to get it. I understand that.
I was okay with that call.
I wasn't. I wanted him to kick a field goal there. I said it before the play and I stand by it.
Well, I would have been okay either way, honestly.
There's a time to be aggressive and a time to not be. And the funny thing is that, you know, on that first one, I'd rather him kick the field goal. On the second one, like, I get it, and I do think that was the right call, but we tend to all feel like we need to be aggressive at all times, and I think Pete gets that in his head, too, because of analytics and all that stuff.
I mean, go back to his college days. He's always been an aggressive coach. I feel like he was a much more aggressive coach earlier on in his time back in the NFL coming out of college because he still had all those feelings of, oh, we want to go for it, because you always see those short conversions in college being successful. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of fought his way into the position that he is right now.
Yeah, he has. And I mean, he's definitely become more conservative as he's gotten older. And I think that's something that happens to all of us. I think that is a kind of a law of nature in a way.
Well, and he's always had that defense that's been able to back up the being conservative.
So why tonight to you would you say the defense didn't back it up? Because it looked to me a few things.
One,
Collinsworth pointed it out and it was worth talking about. The idea that they were so late getting lined up on defense so many different times, and the Rams would go even like a subtle hurry up.
Yeah.
And we just look confused. Why are we confused if we're just running the same thing every time? Like, number one.
Sure.
And then number two, and this is something that has kind of looked this way all season to me. Wagner is a step slow in coverage everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I don't think it's because he's not as fast as he once was. I think it's more because he has to cover up a lot more for a lot of other people. And so he bites those fakes a little harder. And it's really hurting this team, especially against a team like the Rams who leak the tight ends out the back over and over and over again.
I think where it stands out the most to me watching Wagner over the years, and then you watch a team like the 49ers and a guy like Fred Warner, who at linebacker is so fast, and they have the guys up front. He could just play his game. So, yeah, I think that does have something to do with it. The slowness issue, that was really weird because that's one of those things where you allow it to happen maybe once, they get you, but they were doing it consistently. And so you can't bring yourself to say, okay, we need to get lined up quickly because this is what they're doing. This is clearly something they've planned for, and they still don't get there.
Yeah, that part is frustrating. The slowness to adapt as well. And that kind of points to Ken Norton a little bit. In the third quarter, they came out and they actually ran a few more stunts and they got some pressure on Goff. Cool. That's one way to stop that passing game. So you either do that or they seemed very aware of the idea that you needed to stop Gurley. And so they kept the three linebackers in, I think, because that seemed like the most important thing. But if Goff can just stand in the pocket and get to his first read, mm-hmm. now we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you're not getting a pass rush and the three linebackers are ineffective covering the pass and they clearly aren't going to run through Gurley, then why don't you do something like totally different? Like, why don't you start throwing out some dime packages? Why don't you start playing a safety down and playing a robber, right? Where mm-hmm. he's watching those crossing routes and jumping them and be like, all right, fine. We're not getting a pass rush. We're going to rush three or four guys, but we're going to drop a ton of dudes back in coverage and we're going to muddle the picture for Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. You need to confuse him one way or the other. And it's either getting super aggressive up front or you go ahead and you play a ton of coverage and you dare them to throw it in tight windows. But they kind of did neither. They did the in-between.
Well, they made it easy for them. You mentioned the linebackers being an issue, especially in coverage. Jared Goff was able to make his first read, the receiver that was matched up on one of the linebackers.
Yeah.
And he was converting those all day.
Yeah, whether it was tight end, the receiver, it didn't matter.
Yeah, it was like, either Robert Woods or Tyler Higbee. It was those two guys.
And they were going to target that all game long. I mean, that was clearly the game plan.
Or it's what the Seahawks essentially gave him in this game, because Higbee, 7 receptions, 116 yards. Robert Woods, 7 receptions, 98 yards and a touchdown. And I look at the box score and I see 2 rushes for Robert Woods for 29 yards. I felt like he ran the jet sweep about 14 times in this game. Well, maybe it was Josh Reynolds. That's the other guy, because he had 3 rushes for 29 yards.
Well, they were really stretching the perimeter. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like the Rams really made this a horizontal game and said, our speed is going to beat you. And we just didn't adjust.
Frustrating night overall for the Seahawks. Frustrating night for us Seahawks fans. But the good is that there's still 3 games left, and they have upcoming games against the Arizona Cardinals in week 16. And they lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 23-17. I mentioned the Carolina loss to Atlanta, and that's who the Seahawks will go on the road once again to face next week. How about an email before we get on out to hear from Trevor? Says, I just wanted to say that I love the show. It can be tough living in Canada with parents and friends who don't share my intense love for the Seahawks, but you guys keep me going. I also had a question for you. Do you think we would be better off finishing second in the NFC as opposed to first? If we finished first, we'd likely play the 49ers in the divisional round and the Saints in the NFC championship. If we were second, we would probably play the Packers in the divisional round and then the Saints or 49ers. I don't know about you guys, but I'd much rather play the Packers and then the 49ers Saints compared to the 49ers and the Saints. I'd love to hear what you guys think, though. I look forward to the podcast every week, and I'm hoping to keep my narrow lead at the top of the Pick'em League. From Trevor, P.S.
Catfish!
The Rams.
Catfish!
The 49ers.
Catfish!
The Cardinals. Go Hawks.
All the Fs and the right Fs. But as far as worrying about whether or not we're going to be number one or number two, I mean, we need to worry about getting in first.
They will get in. They just need one win. They need a Rams loss. That's going to happen, and the Seahawks will be in the playoffs.
And there's also the possibility that this Rams team could beat the Niners.
Yeah, okay. Then you're counting on another Vikings loss, I think, and I think that'll happen too.
But I'm just saying, if you're looking at number one, number two seeds, things like that. And look, I think it's unlikely, because the Niners have the defensive front to get pressure in Goff's face. And we saw what happened when you got at least a little pressure on him.
Right.
He freaking unravels.
Yeah. And we knew that going into this game, and the defense couldn't do it. But
well, yeah, the defense couldn't do it. And I think there's a point to this, too. Pete Carroll is obsessed with playing this shell defense where you give up everything underneath and the crossing routes and everything between, you know, 0 and 15 yards. Fine. I don't care, as long as I don't get beat deep. And they play this soft coverage all the time. And you saw, once they started getting a little more aggressive in the third quarter, how things started to change.
Sure.
And then they went back to playing a little soft because they were just trying to, you know, minimize the bleeding, right?
Yeah.
Like, somehow they didn't learn the lesson that being aggressive and going after him was a thing that you were either going to feast or famine at. And I'd rather do that then die a death of 1,000 cuts like we did tonight, where Goff just stands back there and goes, first read, first read, first read. Because either play tight with the coverage or blitz some dudes, or even do the combination of the two. But get after it. I'm so sick and tired of the soft ass defense.
Well, I think that about covers it, Adam. I think it just explains the whole night. It was the defense. It was the offense. It was all the, and that's what leads up to a game like this where the Seahawks lose 28-12, and it didn't even really feel that close.
Yeah, it didn't feel that close, and I have not given up any sort of hope on this team. Ultimately, I think this is a type of loss that galvanizes a locker room, and I think this will ultimately be something that is good for the team. I never want Russell Wilson to wear those cleats again, because they're bad luck.
Yeah.
And I hope they're gone. And going forward, we have a great chance of the playoffs, great chance of beating anybody. And I think that's the takeaway from tonight, even after a shoddy performance.
Well, with that, let's get on out of here. We will get to our Welcome to the Flock segment in our regular show this week. So a big thanks to those of you who came in over the last few days. GetInTheFlock.com if you want to get your name recognized in the next upcoming show. And Adam, We have such an appreciation for our members of the flock. We wanted to get it out there after a loss like this. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.